heck is a blood moon, anyway? I haven't figured out what that is. They've been talking about it for a while.
I don't know. Something... I know it's a moon that's reddish.
Is it reddish?
Orangish.
Okay. Is it actually covered in blood?
No.
Something tells me no. Yeah, apparently they're very rare, but they're happening like every 3 weeks or so, it seems.
I thought it was the non-canon extra season to the anime Sailor Moon.
Blood Moon.
Sailor Moon, Blood Moon.
Is that like that death metal J-pop band or
yeah.
something like that?
Oh, Visual K band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a death metal K-pop band?
Yes, there is. It's amazing. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I am Sam Mulvey. Joining me today is Mike Gillis. How you doing?
Hey, good to be here.
And Roz Townsend, how are you?
I am here.
Fantastic. So yeah, blood moons. We had something about that, right? Oh no, not that one.
if it was a band, wouldn't it be MUN with an umlaut?
Like in the pointy script that Slayer uses?
Yeah, well, double umlaut. You could double have blood moon.
Blood moon. Fair enough. The Mormon Church has issued a statement distancing itself from a prediction by one Mormon author linking tonight's blood moon eclipse to an apocalypse. The blood moon occurs when a lunar eclipse of a supermoon occurs. Okay, that helps. What's a supermoon? Tonight, the moon will appear reddish for around an hour. There you go.
Yes.
Yay.
Mormon author Julie Rowe predicted the blood moon would indicate end times calamities. The LDS Church clarified that Rowe's writing should be considered as personal accounts or positions that do not reflect church doctrine, and Rowe herself issued a statement acknowledging that her story is not intended to be authoritative nor create any church doctrine. So it's not authoritative. It's not intended to be authoritative, but the world's going to end everyone anyway. Go out, take all your money out of your bank and spend it on drugs or something. What?
I don't know.
End times calamities are coming.
End time again.
There you go.
Seems to be a running
theme. Just like last week.
You didn't think that anyone would actually prepare for that this time. I don't know. I guess, do we get a lot of Mormon-related end times predictions?
Actually, no.
Because I know it's more of a seven-day Adventist Jehovah's Witness sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking more about the end times.
Yeah, family radio kind of joint. Yeah,
yeah. It seems like a weird sort of, I don't know, evangelical kind of vibe to it. And you don't really get that with, like, you don't get a lot of Catholic end times stuff.
Right.
So I was kind of surprised that I heard anything Mormon. So I wasn't the one interesting thing with Mormonism is that they gave a lot more people the ability to be prophets or to give answers to this sort of stuff. The fact that they actually have to say, hey, this random person can't officially make doctrine.
Yeah.
What other church actually has to have that disclaimer?
Wow.
That's the fair point.
So, like, it's folksy end times DIY, create your own prophecy of doom and destruction.
Right.
Yeah. It just seems like, you know, giving everyone the ability to be a prophet, it seems like you don't have to think that hard to see how this could go wrong.
Well, I think for end times prophecy stuff, it's got to be one of those old guys they have portraits of, like, you know, Kim-like.
Oh, okay. One of the elders of the church. I just imagine people in those tubes, like in Minority Report. This ball comes down the tube. They're like, it's a blood moon. The world's going to end.
Wait, isn't that that's Never Ending Story 2?
Oh my God, it is also Never Ending Story 2.
Yeah, okay. It is also the Venture Brothers.
And you can make a wish on your amulet and the blood moon will end the world.
It could arguably be the lotto drawing in the 80s. Like,
I'll be honest with you. I know that the blood moon is a big astronomical deal, or the super moon is a big astronomical deal, but every time I try to have it explained to me, I fall asleep. It's kind of hilarious.
I don't really know astronomy. I mean, I've taken a class in it, but...
Well, you know what a star is, right?
No. Okay. Yeah, I know. I know what a star is, but I mean, I look at it and I guess astronomy past a certain point. Like, I know these are the planets made out of, like, gas pulled together for gravity, and these are the planets that are made out of rock. Beyond that, it gets a lot hazy to me. I mean, that's about the limits of, like, okay, gravity pulls it in a circle.
It's gross, but most of my knowledge of astronomy is, hey, that looks real purdy.
Hey, it's real purdy.
It's usually like, wow, look at that exploding neutron star. Whee! You know?
I think that's kind of the limit to me in a lot of sciences, that's really purdy, and I'm glad that people are trying to figure it out, and... they are able to figure out science enough that they can build a machine to take better pictures of it. I think that's pretty awesome. But, you know, my personal interest in it doesn't pull me as far as, say, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who just loves the crap out of it.
And yeah.
I'm glad people like him exist because I don't have to take all of these college classes to understand it because somebody is able to take those college classes and is also a great communicator and storyteller.
Yeah, I like how I like how you wrap that up. Yeah, I'm only interested in astronomy in as much as it allows me to get off the planet and away from people. So
so you're basically George Taylor in Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, kind of.
That it's not so much exploration as I want to get away from these horrible people.
Well, I assume you're not horrible. I just...
You gotta say the Heston voice.
I just don't like you very
much. Somewhere in the universe has gotta be something better than man. You gotta do the gravelly.
Well, in less world-ending news, an Oklahoma child was recently told by his pre-K teacher not to use his left hand. When his mother noticed her four-year-old attempting to write with his non-dominant right hand, she contacted the teacher, who provided her with an article referring to left-handedness as unlucky, inauspicious, or frankly evil, according to cultural norms of the past.
Inauspicious?
Yeah. The mother then contacted the superintendent, and while he acknowledged that the article was out of line, said that the teacher wouldn't face any punishment. The boy will likely be transferred to a different class soon. Oklahoma, so the obtuse triangle, boom, boom, boom.
Dun, dun,
I don't
want to
take shots at Oklahoma, because I mean, there's the people who get...
That's half my show now.
I know, but the people who get picked on by mean people in Oklahoma are also Oklahomans.
That's true.
So I don't want to have too wide of a brush.
That's true.
Not all Oklahomans.
Yeah, hashtag not all Oklahomans.
Okay, moving on. No.
But yeah, I don't know. I look at this, and I'm speaking as a left-handed person, so I guess I'm not speaking from the position of right-handed privilege, but I was lucky that I came at the point in our educational history where we didn't enforce this on people, and I learned how to write in a Catholic school, so I figured if anybody was going to get whacked, you know, in the hand with a ruler, it would have been me. So if we were already past that point in 1983-84, then I think we were kind of past that nationally. So hearing this anywhere at all is kind of shocking.
It was fairly recently, because I know there are some older members of my family who were forced to write right-handed.
Yeah, I know. I have an older brother that was left-handed and forced to become a righty and then reverted.
Everyone has a left-handed cousin.
Cousin?
I'm sorry. You're just denigrating my people.
We don't talk about the guy that lives in my basement, okay?
Grandpa?
So,
no, my cousin!
Roz, as the resident person who knows about language because you hate it when you're called a linguist, unquote.
Okay.
Is this merely because in Latin the word for left was sinister? Is this a linguistic quirk, or what's going on here?
I frankly don't know, and it's something that I want to look into a lot, because most of my experience linguistically is with Asian languages and languages that have what's called ideographic writing, so like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, stuff like that. And I want to remember in my experience, I've had students who were literate in Asian languages and were told to become righties, even though their language is read the opposite way of Latin languages.
Wow.
So I want to say that it has to do with clarity of writing in that context, but it's not necessarily just a Western thing.
All right.
That I'm aware of.
Well, if you know, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the red button and let us know, or you can call us at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842.
But you have to dial with your right hand.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm out. So, there is a nerd end to this sort of story.
Oh, is there?
That kind of plays into this, I guess, denigration of left-handed Americans and non-Americans. Green Lantern, you know, the DC superhero?
Yes.
His arch enemy is based on this concept.
Oh, is that why he's called
Sinestro?
I'm left-handed, therefore I'm evil?
Yeah, he's not left-handed and he's evil. He's just evil and he's left-handed. That Green Lantern has a power ring that gives him all sorts of abilities. He wears it on his right hand. His archenemy, Sinestro, who's this alien guy who's a former Green Lantern and now has an evil yellow power ring, wears it on his left hand.
This is beginning to sound a little bit bigoted, Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the targeted marginalized group here.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to go to my left-handed, you know, community group. I get angry about this.
I'm sure you have many left-handed friends.
Oh, until I get enough signatures on my petition to Obama to stop this.
To stop the Green Lantern?
Oh, to stop Sinestro's evil plan.
Okay, what are his evil plans?
Well, mostly just to kill Green Lantern.
And does it involve that Green Lantern action figure that was just a giant head with arms?
Which one are we talking about? I actually probably know which Green Lantern is.
Are you basically saying there's a Green Lantern Mr. Potato Head doll?
Yeah, except imagine that the Potato Head lived in a in a bacteria form for roughly 80 million years, and that's what this thing would look like.
Any five-year-old's toy box is pretty much that.
Autospan? I forget which guy this guy is. There is one Green Lantern who is a giant head with little baby arms.
That's what this was.
Yeah, and he's got the Green Lantern symbol on his forehead.
They made an action figure of it, which is really kind of difficult to make stand up, if you think about it.
Oh, there's so many action figures that can't stand up. Green Lanterns are pretty much anything. If you can think of any random object, there is probably a Green Lantern that looks like it.
Fair enough.
Somewhere in the universe.
All right.
It's like, that's the broccoli Green Lantern.
Shall we trot out an old question? That we've heard before? This is Lester from Facebook, who writes, do we need religion to be ethical? Where do we get our morals from? Well, question one, do we need religion to be ethical, Mike?
No.
Rosalind?
No.
I agree. No.
Well, he had a follow-up question there, too.
Yes. Where do we get our morals from?
Well, the same place we get a lot of our other ideas from. I think that, you know, ethics and morals is an ongoing cultural conversation between cultures and inside of cultures as well. I mean, this is the real weakness of religion as a method for this sort of thing is that they treat it not as a conversation, but as a settled issue. And when you say that, well, no, this conversation ended 2,000 years ago, it really stifles change and it really stifles going and growing forward.
And it's not only a not ended cultural issue, it certainly didn't end 2,000 years ago, but personally, I think people's morals change all the time.
Yeah, there's so many things like the very concept of human rights, slavery, women's rights, gay rights. These are all really, really new concepts. And they're way newer than any religion.
Yeah.
To say that we were just done at that point, the very idea that I have the right to democratically be part of a system that chooses our own leaders, nobody had that idea in their head. That was a radical idea when people wrote these books. And to think that we had everything settled back then when we clearly didn't. I mean, most religious people today hold to ideas that would be insane to somebody who wrote that book.
Absolutely. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue on this one and then talk about movies, because why not?
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. That's our voicemail number. When we went into the break, we were talking about morality, and I'd like to bring something into the conversation, is that, you know, a lot of times we get this question, it's because religious people like to say that they have a you know, logical base in their morality, or that they have the final answer in morality, as you were saying. And while I don't think there are any solid answers, that this is something that we have to explore and have to achieve through discussion and through having civilization, I do think there's a biological basis. We're all biological creatures. We have certain needs. We need energy to come into our bodies. We need a way to make things leave our bodies. We all have rights. We all want, you know, we all want to pursue happiness. And I think because we have that, that does create not necessarily a strict moral standard, but I think it creates sort of a direction that morality might go in. Like, I don't think morality is just for biological creatures, just happens in a vacuum. Not creatures, but whatever.
Well, we're all creatures.
Well, no, because creatures.
You could argue maybe that the biological imperative leads to the idea of enlightened self-interest, and that kind of steers people into a path that would develop morality.
Yeah. I think compassion plays a role in it too, and we can see this in animals, and we've seen it in a number of animals that are, I guess we would argue, less complex than even like the great apes. That we see it in dogs.
So not bananas then?
Not bananas.
Okay.
But we've seen this in chimpanzees, that chimpanzees have an innate sense of fairness. Mm-hmm. And they know when they're being treated unfairly. Try paying attention to just one dog when there's three of them there, and
You
see the other ones react. They know when they're not being treated fairly. Mm-hmm. And you can also see with us and with other animals that you're able to project feelings of yourself on other people. You can see how other people are feeling, and you move to do something about it.
Well, I like this idea of fairness, so let's stick with this as we move on. The United Nations has elected a Saudi ambassador to the chair of the UN Human Rights Council. Faisal bin Hassan Trod has been serving a year on the panel and was promoted to the chair in June. The appointment has led to a public outcry, including Ensaf Haider, wife of Saudi blogger Raif Badawi, who called the move a green light to start flogging him again.
Yeah, we should probably remind people that this is somebody who is being flogged for blasphemy.
For specifically being an atheist in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And saying that he is an atheist in Saudi Arabia.
Getting that question of religion not being always on the ball when it comes to human rights, Saudi Arabia is a great example of it. And
right.
The outcry, I think, comes from a very real place, which is if the chair of this committee is from a country that does not recognize human rights, by any standard that we would have, In a world where we care about things like the lives of women and gay people and political dissidents and people who have a religion other than the majority,
mm-hmm.
How can you take any of the pronouncements from this council seriously? If you're like, well, you have no problem with that guy, and if he's on that council, again, this is not somebody chosen from the general population of Saudi Arabia. This is somebody chosen by the government.
So, Rosalind, you were talking about this. I don't think anybody actually takes this organization seriously.
I mean, if you really want to be broad about it, there are people who don't even take the UN itself seriously.
But, sure, sure.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier, and it's there's a huge, you know, like a vat of hypocrisy involved by involving that person, but it's also a subcommittee of like a subcommittee in terms of the authority that they have, the UN Security Council or whatever.
Yeah.
And if they appointed the point that I was making earlier is if they appointed an American, like, who are we really to talk in some ways? Yeah, there's definite levels of difference. I mean,
yes, I just good.
Our human rights, I'm going to acknowledge that. It's not like we're as horrible as we was 100 years ago by any means, but it's still bad. And I don't know if I don't know if we're really in a place to say.
Well,
in terms of our
on a personal basis, I'm not the U.S. government, so I can say, yeah, this is all junk. And I think it's important to point out that the U.S. is not a party to this to this particular sub-organization.
Not right now.
It's true if we can say that they're a toothless organization, but even if this is just a lie, it's an organization that should at least be a good enough lie to give you the sense that it's actually there to do something. Because if you have, this is like seeing, you know, Abe Vigoda beat up, you know, Floyd Mayweather. Where
I would pay good money.
It's like if that happened, I know it's a fixed fight. I
have no idea who those people are, but they sound like fascinating people.
Abe Vigoda is Fish from Barney Miller.
Okay.
And the other guy's a boxer.
Okay.
So essentially what we sort of have here.
Known for not being dead, in fact.
I want, they're going to have to make pronouncements about things. And even if their only authority is to draw attention to human rights and justices in the world, the fact that they would be headed up by a Saudi means that they are very likely to not speak out against Saudi human rights abuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're frequently really awful. Is the human rights record of the United States sterling? No, it's not.
Well,
but again, no one's is.
I think we have to take into account the fact that the UN, what it's for, mm-hmm. is to put a bunch of politicians in a room yammering about stuff that they disagree about in order to prevent, like, horrible wars.
I mean, this is how World War One started.
Exactly.
We basically had this falling of dominoes where people were like, I don't have time to talk because they're going to attack me, so I need to attack first. And everyone's building up their armies. Everyone's attacking an ally of the person who's involved in
sure.
that. With World War One, the people who were the major powers in the fight were not the people who started the fight.
Exactly. So
these organizations exist so that we're yelling at each other across tables instead of launching armies.
So maybe there's a good reason why Saudi Arabia isn't in charge of this council for rhetorical purposes.
Exactly. But a lot of the issues that happened around World War One and the formation of the League of Nations was that diplomacy process was decentralized. It was usually two countries talking to each other, and they had an idea of what was going on in the other countries, but they needed one big sort of forum where that all could be hashed out. Now, in another question to that is, do no matter how crappy the human rights record might be, do you want to go ahead and disallow that country from being part of that process?
Not from being a part of that process, but from being the voice that actually calls things out when they're living in a glass house. I'm not one of these people like running for the Republican nomination for president who says, we don't like this group of people. We will never talk to them or have diplomatic ties ever. I am not that at all. What I'm saying is that there's a certain moral authority, and it's already tenuous because every country has blood on its hands, period.
I don't know that the moral... I don't know that they have a moral authority, and I think if I were looking for an organization to monitor human rights abuses worldwide, I would not look to the UN.
Yeah.
I would look to something like Amnesty International. I would look to something like the HRC. I would look to something like that. An independent organization that does have the moral
and
authority.
And in any of these contexts, if I'm looking at something going on at the UN, I never see them as like, oh, I should pay attention to what they're saying because they're on some sort of ethical high horse. I see them as a diplomacy arm of their own country speaking in an international context.
I'm not saying that everyone has to be like Superman, that they have to have this sort of perfect, you know, decent morality, but it's not just a question of no, you know, everyone has blood on their hands, but the amount of just senseless, stupid blood that's on the hands of the Saudi government to its own people primarily. It's the sort of things that people get punished for in Saudi Arabia you normally see in a sketch on Monty Python that's about the medieval times.
Sure.
People getting executed, people getting...
Well, I have a story about that, but you have one.
Oh, I was just going to bring up and to take it off the focus of Saudi Arabia, which is obviously, you know, very, all of their violence is basically stifling freedom of religion in a lot of ways, or lack of it. So China, for example, was on the UN Security Council for a while as well. I don't know if they still are or not. How do you feel in terms of them being one of the people on there? One of the countries on there, sorry.
Security Council is slightly different than a subcommittee that specifies human rights.
Well,
I wouldn't want China on there either.
Okay, that's my mistake. I was confused.
The Security Council is that a major world power is like even Russia. Russia has a really bad human rights record. Not as bad as Saudi Arabia, but it's bad.
Well, to underscore that point, a Saudi court has sentenced a protester to death by beheading and crucifixion. Ali Mohammed Nimer was arrested in 2012 and charged with terrorism and waging war on God for speaking out publicly against the ruling Saud family during protests in the wake of the Arab Spring. The then 17-year-old was tortured and forced to sign a confession which was used to convict him. According to an anti-death penalty group, Al-Nimer was arrested without a warrant, was not informed of the charges against him, and was never given access to a lawyer. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly this.
But my point is, we know this, but there still might be some use to having Saudi Arabia involved in the discussion so they can actually get an idea of how they look outside of their own context.
Are they less likely to do that? And especially, you're not likely to get into... I mean, this is not necessarily like the U.S. Congress, where you're constantly looking for reasons to grandstand against your colleagues. I think it's a little bit different on the U.N. With a few exceptions.
But obviously. The UN, that building in New York, it's a rhetoric factory.
Yes.
Its entire purpose is rhetoric, and to structure rhetoric in such a way to de-escalate problems, to change people's minds, to come to nonviolent solutions to internal and external conflicts. So would locking Saudi Arabia out of that discussion, how does that serve this rhetoric aspect of the UN?
I should clarify, and I've tried to do this a couple times, which is I'm not trying to lock them out of the conversation. I want to lock them out of the decision-making arbitration.
What decision-making power does this board have?
If any, yeah.
That's the thing, is that even if it's just something that is largely ceremonial, it's not a question of them not having a conversation. It's a question of them more likely dampening the possibility that we're even going to talk about these things.
What were they talking about before Saudi Arabia was on the board?
I wasn't following this committee before this.
Doesn't that sort of say something?
Right.
It doesn't. Stumping me doesn't make me wrong.
I think it kind of does in this case.
In this case.
Yeah,
no.
I kind of believe it does, because if this was an organization that had some sort of moral authority to do something about human rights in the world, you and I, as people who report regularly on human rights, might hear about them more often. And the fact that we traditionally haven't, I think, is telling.
And the fact that we'll be reporting them more often and nitpicking all of the weird things that they're going to be doing, I think, is a good opportunity. I don't think it's kind of gross and hypocritical that they have the position of power that they do, but I ultimately think it might be a good thing because, A, it's kind of toothless, and B, it brings attention to them.
I worry about toothless because even if you don't have the ability to, you know, actually bring forth this resolution or anything like this, you still are the face of it. And the face of it is something that draws attention to it. And drawing attention to it, even in speech, is something that can spur other people who do have that authority.
And the only time I've heard about this particular committee is when Saudi Arabia was brought on as a member. And now again, when it was Saudi Arabia's turn to head the committee. This is the only time I've ever heard about this committee. I've heard I've heard stuff about human rights stuff come from the World Health Organization. I've heard it come from UNICEF. I've heard it come from other organizations which actually have a mandate to go out and do stuff. And that's a slightly different moral authority than this particular rhetoric factory committee.
I don't think it's an argument in favor of this to say that, oh, it doesn't really matter anyways because this thing is all just a joke. I think things are as powerful.
That's a huge mischaracterization of what we're saying.
I'm just saying if soft political power has any real ability to do anything, even if it is just an appearance, it's like a shadow on the wall, it still creates an image that we don't really take this seriously.
I disagree.
If we have an organ,
strongly.
I mean, even if you compare Saudi Arabia to the rest of the Muslim world, it's the only country, even in that region, that doesn't let women drive.
I don't understand how that's... I don't understand, given what me and Roslyn are saying, how the second part of your statement applies to the first part of the statement.
Well, you're saying that that this wasn't even an issue until this story.
That's a foundational. That's not my point.
But that's a foundational. What I'm saying, though, is that if we're getting to the point where we're saying, don't worry, it can't hurt anything because this is largely just people talking.
That's not what we're saying, Mike.
I think you might be confusing the idea of us saying in terms of policy it's toothless versus it having an impact on something. I think it can be potentially very impactful and can be an instrument of calling out Saudi Arabia for all of the really horrible things it's done. But in terms of actual policy making calling out human rights abuses, that's what they're officially there to do. But no one's going to be paying attention to that. People are going to be paying attention to the fact that the Saudis have done horrible things for years and years.
But as an end result of this country being named to the leadership of this organization, people who are not otherwise having a conversation about Saudi Arabian human rights abuses are now talking about it.
Yes.
And so this organization, which was toothless previously, now has this controversy over it. This might be the path from a toothless committee to a committee with teeth.
I hope that's the case, but I don't think it will be.
But even if it isn't, I think the fact that we're having these conversations and the fact that these conversations are going on in the media, I think gives this sort of thing some power and shines a light on the horrible stuff that's happening in Saudi Arabia.
I hope that's... I want you to be right.
I am right. I'm not saying that anything's going to be done about it, but that has been achieved.
Yeah, I guess it just... The argument there, it feels a little bit to me like the giving President Obama the Nobel Peace Prize, hoping that it'll spur him to
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, no, I'm just saying it feels like it's a means to create.
Okay, it feels like that, but that's not my point at all. It has never been my point, and that's not what I'm. That's never been anything I'm saying. My point is, it's not about what Saudi Arabia does. It's about the reaction to the. It's about the reaction to people to Saudi Arabia and their relationship with human rights.
Could you concede, though, that there's an equal possibility that this might just silence dissent in within that committee to this very problem?
Within that committee, they were already silent. This is more about the conversation happening outside of that committee. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We'll be back after the break.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I've got a couple people I'd like to thank. I'd like to thank Rick from Elma, as usual, and Stacy from Ontario, who writes, I enjoy the show, but I just wanted to help out. By the way, does Sam know how much he sounds like Jeff D. of the nonprofits? No. I love the comparisons I'm getting to other members of the atheism community, because I'm also apparently... Wow, I'm blanking on names. I look like a tiny...
I know that you don't sound like Chuck D. from Public Enemy.
I don't sound like Chuck D. from Public Enemy. That's true. So if you'd like to help out with Ask an Atheist, you can go to askanatheist.tv. Click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping the lights on here at Ask an Atheist. So we have a fun email here. Where did that go? I have an interest. This is from Vigar from Southeast Norway. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. I have an interesting conundrum to ponder. We have seen way too many Christian movies. I hear a lot about it, and I never watch them. So I have decided to figure out how would one make a good atheist movie.
Do we really want to? I mean, if you're going to sell it to me, I need the plot and I need the concept and all that stuff. It just happens to have that sort of undercurrent. But once it goes into overcurrent, I can be kind of allergic to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talking about just having a good atheist lead character, I'd like to see that, especially if the story's not about religion. I mean, there are characters in movies all over the place who are, you know, Christian or whatever. You just see them in a Catholic church or whatever in one scene, but it doesn't have to be their only sole character trait.
I was just going to say, the first thing, I would have a visceral reaction if someone went, let's watch this atheist movie. And I kind of went, really?
Yeah, because it sounds like the title of the movie is going to be No, Really, God's Dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it's
no,
just
really,
going to be,
you guys.
Yeah.
Because that stuff is almost never good, whether it's like the Atlas Shrugged movie. And I don't know, I've been sort of toying with this idea. I know that you and I have talked about this a little bit, Roz, but I think that the more undisguised and bigger part of the plot ideology is, and sort of a piece of art that's a story, the better that story has to be to counter it. Otherwise, it just turns into like a Captain Planet or like the Ray Comfort movie or something.
In terms of craft, yeah. The more ham-fisted your point, the better the art has to be, basically.
I mean, that's why science fiction exists. We can talk about social and moral and historical issues, but we disguise them a little bit. That's why we have metaphor. It's like Planet of the Apes isn't really about just gorillas on horses. It's about like racism and nuclear war.
And I think it's okay to make that metaphor very, very obvious, so long as the story is engaging enough to still be entertaining in some way, or at least thought-provoking.
Yeah, you have to it well, you know? And I think a lot of times people who are big fans of like Kirk Cameron get into this mindset where the message is good, so the movie is good, and it's like, they're so not. Again, see Captain Planet.
On the other hand, he says that he never watches Christian movies. Might I suggest you give them a shot? Because they're hilarious. I'm as a fan of bad movies, and I think we've talked about that quite a bit, you and I. Some of the best stuff is, like, for example, you can find it on YouTube. You need to check it out. It's a movie by a guy named Estes Perkel. And the name of the movie is If the Footmen Tire You, What Will the Horses Do? And the whole point of the movie is what happens when Cuban Russians or Russian Cubans take over the United States. And they're all clearly from so far in the South, not even Southerners understand their accent. And they're all trying to do a Cuban Russian accent at the same time. They're not sure exactly where they're from.
Like, okay. And the linguistic-y stuff. That sounds like such a fun movie to watch.
it's absolutely hilarious. And there's this part where there are kids in the room and there's this guy wearing this communist badge and stuff like that. And he's going, I see you have Jesus here. Let us pray to Jesus for candy. I see no candy. I taste no candy. Now let us pray to Lenin for candy. And then some really tired, tiny guy comes in and throws candy at the kids, like, really hard.
You know what that kind of reminded me of? You ever watch You Can't Do That on Television?
Yes.
He kind of looks like the sort of adult that they had as the
Yes.
The weird kind of facial hair and the crazy accent, and he's acting with children. I'm like, this is just like, you know, a weird John Birch Society version of You Can't Do That on Television.
It's an amazing movie, and that's sort of my point, is the reason this is such a great movie is because ideology is driving what's happening in the movie, not a sense of plot, not a narrative, not anything fun, which is why I never want to see an atheist movie.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, it's because it would be, unless you're doing this, no, because even if you're doing this and you're doing it intentionally, it's not as funny.
Yeah, I want just good characters. I want a strong story. I want something that somebody who doesn't agree with the overall premise of the ideology can enjoy as well. That I think, like, 1984 isn't just a book about totalitarianism. It's also a really well-written story that's very evocative and very visceral. And even if you change the ideology around a bit, it would be just as strong.
Mm.
I mean, yes, it's about the things that George Orwell was feeling about the Soviet Union, but you can change that. It sci-fies it up a bit.
Yeah.
It's just well done.
Right.
And a lot of times people who are pushing something with ideology, they're so caught up in getting the ideology right that they don't make it good. And the good part is the stuff that makes you want to watch it in the first place to even listen to the ideology.
I was actually told that in the Iron Man movies that, Iron Man is an atheist. Is that actually true?
I've seen that before in the comics. When you're a character that's written by like 50 different authors over 50 years,
I'm specifically talking about the movies, since the subject here is movies.
I don't think they've ever explicitly said it in the movies. They've never had him talk about God. I know that the Tony Stark that exists in Marvel Comics has said that he's an atheist in the past.
It sounds like such a Tony Stark throwaway line, too.
Yeah, Tony Stark isn't going to preach at you except about himself and his technology.
Right.
He's going to brag and stuff, but he's not going to, like, you know, go on a poli-sci show or anything like that to talk about anything other than how cool the fact that he has a suit that shoots missiles is.
Yeah, I suppose he wouldn't be a great characterization of an atheist, I suppose, except that he can explode bad guys. That's pretty good.
The actually interesting thing is that if you look at the comic book version of the Avengers, a majority of them, I think, are the founding Avengers, are atheists.
Wow.
Including Bruce Banner, who's the Hulk. Hank Pym, who is Ant-Man. So I think Thor is not an atheist. But yeah, I think that a good majority of them are. It's not something that they make a big deal out of. It's just part of their character. Well, I mean, the thing that makes Tony Stark cool isn't the fact that he doesn't believe in God. It's all the other things.
Well, Sam mentioned the idea of Tony Stark not being a very good characterization of an atheist. I want to throw the question back at you. What would be?
Someone who's not got huge problems all the time. Because, I mean, that's the thing is, every time I've seen an atheist in the media, you got House, who's a heroin addict. You've got that person that on a TV show that Becky watches, who's autistic. It seems like a lot of the times when they have a atheist portrayed in the media, they've got huge psychological problems or just something that prevents them from being what
normal
they could be in a way outside of the usual cycle of the hero Campbell type stuff.
Well, it's the misanthropic troubled genius.
Yeah, it's kind of old.
They treat the fact that you don't believe in God like it's a learning disability sometimes.
So,
like, I can understand all these things, but I don't get faith.
So
I hate that.
With that discussion, with the fact that we think the best atheist movies aren't actually about atheism, joining us now is Jeremy Whitman. How you doing?
Oh, good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. So you saw this question, and you actually came to me with a notepad with information on it. I think this is good for discussion. So you've got a list of that you think are good atheist movies.
Yeah. I don't believe this question was asking is there an atheist propaganda film in the works or how someone would do that. I hope that's not what this question is asking.
Sure.
I'm sure there is some jerk somewhere out there working on such a thing. But yeah, in terms of just movies that atheists would gravitate to or media that atheists would gravitate to or that have strong atheist characters, definitely House, even though, as you said, he's flawed.
Yeah.
The show would be nothing if he was not flawed.
Yeah. I like that show. I stuck with it for the whole run.
The first season of True Detective, one of the protagonists is a strong atheist in that. And the second season of True Detective is so bleak that if you watch it all the way through, you'll stop believing in God. And then we mentioned Planet of the Apes deals a lot with the battle between religion and government without necessarily being straight up.
So which version of the Planet of the Apes are we talking here?
That's the original
one with the gun nut on a horse.
It's basically, in a lot of ways, the climax of Planet of the Apes is essentially the Scopes monkey trial mixed with, like, the Red Scare.
Scopes monkey trial.
Does that
run
make
by monkeys.
Yeah, does that not make it the Scopes human trial at that point?
Totally is. And it's about evolution, and there's the church and the state in the Planet of the Apes are married, and they have the prosecutor go like, oh, these crazy intellectuals have a theory called evolution. I mean, they don't even disguise that part of it, but they're just talking about how ridiculous it was that apes could have possibly evolved from something as low as man.
Have you done Planet of the Apes on Radio versus the Martians yet?
Whoa, we totally did.
Oh. Okay, cool.
It is a great series. If you've never actually seen Planet of the Apes, you totally should. Because a lot of people just say, like, oh, gorillas on horses with rifles. That's totally in it, too, and it's amazing. But it's actually a really, really smart movie about a totally misanthropic, angry guy who takes off from the planet Earth because he hates people to colonize another planet. And he's like, thank God I'm never going to see those people again. And lands on a planet of apes. Spoiler, it's the Earth all the whole time.
He went to colonize another planet?
Yeah.
Was there a woman in that rocket with
there
him?
There was. She died on the trip over.
Okay.
Thing fell apart really quick. Have some backups, you know?
But there was was three men and only one woman, correct?
Yeah, so this would have gotten ugly fast. But yeah, it's
didn't really think this one through, apparently.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you don't sorry astronaut Stewart, you don't really get to choose what your job is. But yeah, it's one of those things. Anyways, it's about a guy who hates humanity having to defend the human race and his own sense of, like, as a person and having autonomous rights against people who are making all the same arguments about how stupid and destructive humans are that he does.
Wasn't this guy also Moses at one point?
He totally was Moses.
Awesome. All right, Jeremy, what's next on your list?
If you wanted a movie that deals strongly with atheist values, probably Contact, I think, would be one.
Contact is a great movie.
Very scientific, and the protagonist is not a junkie.
No.
Not a misanthrope either.
Not a misanthrope, not a junkie. Smart, like space.
I don't mind that we have some flawed characters. I don't want everyone to have to be, you know, Captain America, but no. Some of them should be Captain America.
I was going
to
say, I get bored so quickly if there was a character without any flaws doing all this kind of stuff all the time.
Well, Ayn Rand has all her characters actually are flawless atheists.
There
yeah.
you go.
And that's completely boring. I'm not saying...
That is actually an atheist movie. Atlas Shrugged. You could go that way.
Are all her stories Atlas Shrugged? I mean, and the Fountainhead. I mean, Ayn Rand's stories were basically always about ruggedly handsome individualists who were really smug.
I guess my point, yes. But it's I guess my point is it seems
or,
like...
Or articles for Cat Fancy.
Have you seen that? It's amazing. But moving on.
Ask an Atheist does not endorse reading or... following Ayn Rand.
In any way, shape, or form.
I was going to stop at reading.
Yeah. Yeah, don't read. No, my point is that anytime there's a character-centric thing with an atheist in it, it seems to be like there's really deep problems going on. Or even when it's not character-centric, can we have something, some character growth, some sort of development that where they're not a horrible misanthrope?
That's positive.
You could have a great movie about someone who, say, was raised Catholic, was molested and had to come to terms with being molested, and they're also gay as an adult and think for most of their life that it's because they were molested and they have to come to terms with leaving the Catholic faith and that it's crap, and have a liberation story like that.
Yeah.
But it would have to take such a light touch to not come off as a movie like God Is Not Dead or anything that Kirk Cameron Camp puts out.
Exactly. But but
there is something you could do there, breaking that sort of bondage. There is a narrative to be had there. Society might not be ready for it.
And then in stupid action movies, which, you know, we love, or at least we do.
Crap, but it's stupider the better.
You've got the guy who crosses himself before he goes into battle, where it's not really a plot point, but it's sort of humanizing the person who's about to go get shot because they're a red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there's no way to do that with atheists because we don't like cross ourselves or anything like that, but something akin to that, where it's just sort of a throwaway thing that humanizes the character.
Yeah.
Before they go get the alien eggs deposited in their chest by an ovipositor.
Actually, speaking of, you know, a good, you know, role model type atheist character where it's not their only character trait.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about this before, but the DC Comics has a character named Mr. Terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Who is as close to that?
I thought
character.
That was a professional wrestler.
No, that's Mr. Wonderful.
Oh,
Paul Orndorff.
Okay,
Mr. Terrific.
I love doing this.
But, Mr. Terrific is essentially a guy who's a polymath superhero. He's good at being good at things. So he's got like 14 doctorates. He's like a decathlete. He's a super genius.
Is he a mathlete?
He probably is totally a mathlete. He's good at like everything that he can learn things really, really well, but he doesn't really have superpowers. So he can like read a really detailed medical journal and then perform that surgery. So he's like really good at being good at things. And
I think Becky watched a TV show like that. What was it called? The Pretender, I think.
And the cool thing about him is he's an atheist character. It comes up a couple times, but he's not smug. He's not angry, which is something you see a lot. He's not always picking fights with his religious co-workers and stuff on the Justice Society. He becomes, by elected acclaim by the other members of the team, the leader of the team. They elect him chairman of the Justice Society. And there's so many great things about the character that he's just not a jerk to people the way they say Batman is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes into the other things when you're written by a bunch of different people. They're like, oh, he's an atheist character. How do I write stories about that? Oh, I treat his atheism like a learning disability. And that's when I would get really angry, because it's like everyone wants representation in fiction. You want to feel like you can see yourself in these characters. And
yeah.
I think Mr. Terrific, this one, Michael Holt, this version of Mr. Terrific, was created in my early 20s. But you never really grow out of not seeing yourself in media and wanting that. But when you get stories where he goes to an alternate universe where the car accident that his wife died in that prompted him not out of vengeance to become a superhero, but wanting to live up to her memory of him and saying, I want to be this good person out of my wife's memory. And so I became a superhero and developed all this technology and stuff like that. He meets a version of himself on another Earth where his wife didn't die. And that him is a born-again Christian, and I got so angry. Don't say he's an atheist because a sad thing happened to him. That's a trope I want to see die.
Yeah, for the record, my argument about portrayal of atheist characters isn't subtractive. I'm not saying I don't want to see these characters. I do. They're interesting. It's additive. You know what I mean?
I'm also beginning to think that this might be my personal interpretation, because I am into genres of fiction where it can be very easily implied that all the characters are atheist.
Yeah, that's true.
Sci-fi.
Yeah. So speaking of which, what's next on your list there, Jeremy?
Well, if we're going to talk about dumb action movies, actually, I believe the last line in the Transformers quadrology perhaps makes it, what happens in, spoiler alerts.
Okay.
There's four movies.
No, I haven't seen it.
Called Transformers.
There's a fourth one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and
wow. Combined
to watch them will feel like you lost a week and a half of your life. They're really exhaustingly long movies, all of them. They don't make any sense. But in the fourth one, the creators of the Transformers send a bounty hunter to Earth to capture Optimus Prime, and Optimus Prime defeats that bounty hunter with the help of dinosaurs he rescues from robot jail.
Yet this movie still sucks. That's a crime. If you can't make that plot awesome, then you fail as a filmmaker.
All right, where does this go?
Well, and then he gets mad and he flies off into space essentially to kill God. At the end of the movie, he goes, "This is a message for the creators. I'm coming for you," and flies into space with a giant robot sword. So
he
will be an atheist after the fifth movie, I guess.
Isn't there a line in that movie where he frees the dinosaur and says, "I've given you freedom, so do what I say or I'll kill you"?
Yes. Essentially.
Oh, that level of non-self-awareness makes me happy and scared.
Michael Bay, what would we do without you?
Probably better movies.
I think half of YouTube would disappear if it wasn't for criticism of Michael Bay's movies.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just cat videos and Michael Bay criticism.
.com.
There's got to be a way to combine those two somehow.
Oh, my. Ayn Rand would
cats,
be way.
Kittens criticizing Michael Bay movies.
Or you could just force a cat to watch all Michael Bay movies and see if it doesn't go feral.
What, like Clockwork Orange, yeah. Ludovico technique?
Open its eyes and just set it down there.
Do you play Beethoven over the top of it all?
Somebody wants red paint thrown on them.
Wow, this got weird.
It sounds like you're describing the opening scene to 28 Days Later with a chimp.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I think that was a Michael Bay movie the chimp was watching. It's probably shot better.
Is there another?
Last piece on my notes, without getting into documentaries, of which there are several great ones, such as The God Who Wasn't There and yeah. Hell House and many, many things like that, is An Honest Liar.
Which is?
The James Randi documentary.
Oh, yeah. Haven't seen much.
I haven't either. Yeah. I do like James Randi quite a bit.
James Randi's funny. Mm-hmm.
And The Invention of Lying, actually, in terms of a mainstream thing where he invents lying and then invents God to shut people up asking him questions, I believe. I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it's a very good movie.
I heard it's a very sweet movie, too. Yeah.
That's Ricky Gervais' movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which makes sense. And
Ricky Gervais is an interesting character that he's able to be so incredibly smug, but also sweet and gentle at the same time. Has anyone else ever accomplished that?
I question whether or not he's accomplished that.
Yeah, I've never heard of him being described as sweet.
But the stuff that he wants to sort of create for himself and characters that he's gravitated towards creating, whether in the movie The Invention of Lying, and there's the other one, I think it's called Derek. Where he plays like an orderly. I haven't seen it.
Where the robot boy flies a plane? Derek?
What are we talking about? Is that Daryl that's at the
no,
robot
Daryl.
Movie?
Yeah. He was an atheist, the robot.
I'm sure they were. He believed in Silicon Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes back to Red Dwarf.
Man, I would love a question about Silicon Heaven. I'd love to get that in my email someday. Or you have to refute Silicon Heaven.
Actually, is Silicon Heaven?
It's where all the calculators go when they die.
Oh.
Yeah.
But there is no Silicon Heaven.
And that was actually one of the things in Red Dwarf, which I might actually add to that list, is there's an episode where Crichton, who's the android on board, has all this programming, and one of them is a program in his head that's about Silicon Heaven, that he believes that he can be abused and put upon and used as a piece of equipment because he'll get this wonderful afterlife after he dies. And he actually gets that program broken.
Yeah.
And has to learn how to feel a sense of hope otherwise.
And
he actually has a conversation with the character of Lister, who says, well, what about humans? They go to heaven. He's like, humans don't go to heaven. That's just what they tell you so you don't go nuts.
Well, yeah, Lister has been described as an atheist on the show.
Yeah, and Rimmer.
Well, I thought Rimmer was a Seventh-day Advent hoppist.
No, his parents were.
Oh.
But the cool thing about that, learning to break his belief in Silicon Heaven actually saves Crichton at the end of it, because he tricks his replacement into going, there's no Silicon Heaven, and the replacement is like, no.
And oh, he blows up, that's yeah. Right. Oh, that is such a great show.
Yeah, so Red Dwarf, like, here it was on TV. Where I grew up, Doctor Who was on TV, and like Red Dwarf was the secret underground show nobody knew about.
Really?
Yeah, so you were like a British sci-fi hipster if you knew about Red Dwarf.
Ooh. Red Dwarf is interesting, because I've heard that outside of the United Kingdom, we here in the Pacific Northwest are the biggest fan base
for Red
Dwarf in the world, yeah. And that every time that they come to the United States, the cast members always come to Seattle.
Huh. Wow.
Always.
Something to do, I guess. But that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam. With me was Roz, Mike, and Jeremy. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. You can Twitter us at askanatheistwa, W-A, not the other guy. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Our voicemail number is 844-753-7842. If you're on the podcast, stick around. We're going to be doing a fourth. Catch you later. Or see you later.
Bye.
Red Dwarf reference.
Along the Yelm Highway lies Ramtha's house.
We haven't brought this one up in a while.
My jam.
Yeah.
Still haven't found that guy.
It's the Rosalind theme song.
Yeah.
If you want to go to Yelm.
So you said that you have a book signed by, not Ramtha, but Jay-Z Knight.
Yeah, well, yes, it is signed by Ramtha, too.
Oh, okay.
Not as Ramtha. Jay-Z Knight is Ramtha. Jay-Z Knight is Ramtha.
And Ramtha wants to do the hustle. There we go.
Right, okay. So, well, but no, I mean, is it signed as Jay-Z Knight or is it signed as Ramtha?
Oh, I haven't opened the case. That was the limit of my curiosity. At
what?
That point, I'm like, oh, hey, there's a Ramtha book in there.
Well, inquiring minds want to know.
I'm not going to walk halfway across the store to get the key.
Signed by one of the authors. Is that the...
That's the fun thing about working at a used bookstore is that people bring things in. And I've heard stories. I haven't actually had this happen to me. But I know a friend who has gotten copies of books that are clearly not really signed by the author being pawned off as things signed by the author. And one of them was a book that was signed by Robert Jordan that came out after he died. And you're like, you know,
I'll give you a dollar for it.
That's, you know, Robert Jordan was dead when this actually came out, right? Most of it was written by, you know, Brandon Sanderson. And it says so on the cover of the book. Unless you had like a, you just took a Ouija board triangle and attached a pen to it and said, sign this, spirit.
Well, now it's like a social experiment. I'm wondering if you could
dongs.
Just find a book and put any arbitrary name in it and it looks vaguely like an author's signature and just see if you can pawn it off on someone.
I know that I've had a coworker tell me that somebody brought in a book that it would have been a really beautiful, fancy old edition of this classic literature on just beautiful leather-bound stuff, and they had signed it. They had ruined it. They would have gotten a lot of money for these books if they hadn't tried to pretend to be also, you know, William Faulkner. And you would have done really, really well if you hadn't pushed it a little bit far. It's kind of like, it feels like we're looking at an Aesop's fable here about the destructive power of hubris. That you had it, but you just had to push it that much further. I know you're not George Orwell, because George Orwell has the same handwriting as William Faulkner.
Is it hubris or a meth habit?
It's a little bit of both. It's hubris to support a meth habit.
But if it was Aesop's Fables, it has to be like a cricket that did it all.
A cricket. Some pig. There's a meth addict who's got a little spider that lives in the corner of his apartment that's like, I want to save this meth addict with my web writing. Also, you should stop doing meth. They come to evict him, and they're like, oh, never mind. I just read the web. We're going to let him stay here without rent.
Some meth head. I love it. Okay, we should do that. That was a radio play for you. So do we talk about the interesting view outside of my window here at Mulvey International Studios?
Oh, wait, are they doing the thing today? The filming?
Yeah, well, that too. They're apparently filming a car commercial, like, right outside my door today. we should, like, go out and lay down on the floor like that football movie.
Okay, you were talking about the...
that killed all the young people.
Yeah, the one where they all died, yeah.
You're talking about the Red Skull skateboard out there?
Yeah, the Red Skull skateboard out there. I didn't really want to say this on the air, but I'm kind of perplexed by this, and I want to share it with you, the listeners of Ask an Atheist. So right outside my window, I can see directly into the yard of my neighbor, and that's usually okay. Last year, it was huge fields of pot, because degenerative nerve disorder also... potheads.
I mean, seriously, huge fields of pot is not an exaggeration.
No.
Taller than the fence.
Taller?
Cornfield.
Yeah, they had to, like, they built a canopy or a container to hide the fact that there was pot, and then, like, 6 or 7 feet, and then it grew over that, and they had to, like, tap up, like, pie plates and stuff.
We already took in, like, thousands of, like, weird youth that wanted to find jobs in pot shops, and now you've just probably brought over another, like, 50.
They're gone this year. They're not here anymore. I'm eating.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, but that's the thing, too, is that there's this... there's always something weird in that yard, and we always have a really good bird's-eye view of it.
Yeah. Well, last summer, my house smelled like pot all summer. This summer, which is now over, there's a skateboard with swastikas in the backyard, also gun targets.
But they're next to the skateboard.
Yeah.
So it implies that the skateboard might be a target. I'm guessing BB gun? Because if it was like a gun, like a rifle, I guarantee you would hear that.
I'm pretty sure I'd hear
BB
that.
BB guns.
It we is hear,
BB gun. Mr. Magoo would hear it.
So to one side of you, you have
Mr.
The,
Magoo is blind, not deaf.
Swastika skateboard shooting range. And then on the other side of you, don't you have like a guy that does like sawing? I hear a buzz.
Oh, they're rehabbing that house because the guy who lived in it previously apparently used feces like paint.
He should have had a spider friend.
Some painter.
Yeah. They would have, instead of throwing him out, they're like, hey, this guy's just like Jackson Pollock, but smellier.
So, yeah, that raises the question. Do I live next to neo-Nazis or do I live next to people who hate neo-Nazis?
Oh, my God. You do not want to get caught between those two.
No. No, oh, that man. Would be a bad time.
It'd be like the opening credits of the chat.
Oh, what if the guy rehabbing that house is a neo-Nazi? Each other, and then they fight, and then...
And then the guy that painted the house with feces shows up.
And then they get, like, ballistic war happening, and I'm basically the UK. That will kind of
suck. By people who hate Nazis, you mean Captain America?
By Captain America,
or
yeah!
Indiana Jones, are their roommates? They're like, there's Nazis over there!
I mean, what do I do about this? Answer, nothing. But it's just one of those weird... What the hell's going on? Are they
shooting at it? Do they hate the swastika skateboard, or are they endorsing the swastika skateboard? And... the swastikas on, I mean, swastikas typically pop pretty well, all right, but they're kind of subdued swastikas. They're not really in your face. Hell's Angels.
Low-key swastika.
Well, they're not the red and white and black combo. I mean, they're done with like white out or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And they could, of course, you know, a lot of people use the swastika to mean non-racist things. That's not true.
Just not most of them. I don't think we're dealing with like a Sikh or Hindu temple here. I think we're dealing with swastikas on a skateboard, and on the context of on the canvas of a skateboard, what does a swastika mean? 99% means swastika.
And then what if they're gone in a year and there really is a Hindu temple that shows up, like that is built right next to your house, and there are legitimate swastikas there.
And they show up and go, hey,
legitimate swastikas? You sound like a Republican senator.
Legitimate swastikas?
Yeah.
Legitimate
swastika.
What exactly is a swastika?
it's a really racist throwing.
So where did you send that image? Did you send it to
Vishnu?
Okay.
There'd be like a white supremacist ninja.
Oh yeah. David Duke is the ninja. Throw the swastika.
But it's only got four sides, so sometimes it misses and just
it frequently misses. You can always miss with the swastika.
Do neo-Nazis have, like, a way to hang up their coats, like the way that you can get a geek, what's that, catalog geek stuff or whatever? You can put a ninja star up as a coat hook. Do they have that?
Probably.
No.
There's a lot of nunchucks on doorknobs, I'm guessing. Yeah. Oh, man.
So, skate Nazis must die.
Don't come in the dorm room. Ninja-ing happening.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could see the transition from...
Instead of a sock.
or a coat hanger.
It's not that hard to imagine that, you know, a racist would have some amount of experience being able to run around in a mask. I mean, you're already kind of halfway there, you know? You just add, you know, throwing stars to it.
Maybe he's not, maybe this guy's not a racist. He just wants to feel like he belongs to something.
I'm not seeing, well, you could do masks, or like there were the meth head criminal guys, and they looked very white supremacist-y, like skinny, sort of methy looking guys, and they had a permanent marker in various colors just scribbled all over their faces in an attempt to make a mask.
Oh, wow.
It was like green and
purple. Are you talking about ICP fans here?
They probably ran in the same circle.
So you're talking about, you know, basically drawing a ski mask on your face with a Sharpie?
Yes, that was what they did, pretty much.
You know that doesn't work, right?
Well, you'll have to tell them.
Well, if you know a lot about shadow and depth perception, if you've got like an arts degree, but you decide you want to rob a convenience store and you want to bring your two talents together.
Crime and art school.
Mm-hmm. You look like a totally different person.
You know it's hard to take that off after the robbery. You know that, right?
Why are you looking at me as if this is something I've done?
I'm just going to guess. And I'm just going to make an assumption. Just make a random accusation to somebody in the room. And if I see that immediate guilt, got it.
I look perpetually guilty. Everything I've done. I mean, I'm from a town with 500 people, and I'm sure about 450 of them probably belong to some sort of white supremacist organization. I was like one of the 50 that wasn't. That's why I left.
You mean a hipster?
Yeah, I was a hipster.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's way too mainstream.
Yeah. Your KKK is too cool for
racial
me.
Racial equality is way more underground.
Yes. Nobody was doing it back then.
Yeah, nobody. I did it way before it was cool, and then it became cool, and I went back to being a racist.
That would be a lot funnier if that didn't actually happen in Seattle.
Oh, that is somebody's life story.
There is a lot of weird hipster racism that goes on.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Okay, you have to define hipster racism for me.
Oh, hipsters that make racist jokes and then go, I'm not racist, I'm making jokes about racism by being racist.
I'm post-racist.
Yeah, he's being post-racist or post-modernist racist.
Talking about Adam Sandler?
No. Yes.
No.
Adam Sandler's just a bully.
No, right?
What?
Adam Sandler, he does regularly, there's racist jokes, but he has a character play a minority to say all the racist jokes. Mm-hmm. So it's okay, even though a white guy wrote them for me.
I don't know. He might be a racist, but I thought you were calling him a hipster. And he's not a hipster.
But I mean, the sort of like, I'm not really racist, but all of my jokes are about people being different makes them a target of derision.
Yeah.
It's basically, if you look at Adam Sandler movies, I don't know if I've heard anyone articulate this yet, but not only is his character just a schlubby guy who regularly flies into violent rages and beats the crap out of people, which is really weird when you think about it, but they're basically movies from the perspective of Biff Tannen from Back to the Future. This is how Biff Tannen sees himself, rather than this like dumb, you know, bully. He sees himself as the cleverest guy in the room that everyone loves, who's the best at basketball and everything that he tries, and everyone else around him gets zinged, and then people get kicked in the crotch.
The last thing I've heard about Adam Sandler doing was like a thing that was filmed on an Indian reservation. It was really racist against Native Americans.
Oh,
kind of thing.
What? I know the situation.
Is this project?
Oh, he got a contract with YouTube to do a couple movies, and one of them was called The Ridiculous Six, which is a Western, and apparently...
This sounds like an asylum knockoff of Quentin Tarantino's upcoming movie.
It kind of is. I think he was trying to be like the Magnificent Seven or something.
Crazy 88.
Yeah.
Or Hateful Eight.
Basically, there's a lot of stuff that the Native American actors were asked to do. They're like, okay, that's pretty racist. That's really kind of horrible. Mm-hmm. And they walked out on him. They said, oh, I'm not going to film myself doing this. I'm not going to take any amount of money to do this. And they all just walked en masse. So I think they're all going to be played by Rob Schneider now, which is usually what he does. Is he gets Rob Schneider to play like an immigrant character that everyone laughs at.
Well, and then wasn't the premise that Adam Sandler was a white kid that grew up on a reservation somehow, and now he like is part of Native?
He's 116.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Who? What now?
This is the premise of the film. This is not actually Adam Sandler's history.
Maybe both at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't want to talk about Adam Sandler ever.
Why are we talking about Adam Sandler? Oh, yeah. We could talk about somebody better.
That's everybody.
David Duke was in the news recently.
Oh!
Yeah, he endorsed Trump.
Yeah, Trump didn't accept it. But the fact that, he's the sort of person that David Duke wants to vote for says something.
Yeah, there
David
you go.
David Duke, the Klan member?
Yeah, David Duke, the Klan member. Also, that guy who got up at the Trump rally, who said everything that people who make fun of Trump say his supporters are like, but they're going to go, yeah, that's just a stereotype. It isn't real. And the guy acted exactly like it. He was like everyone's horrible uncle who ruins Thanksgiving and sends you email forwards about how Obama is a communist.
I love those.
It's just like, wow, you're the sort of person that I would play if I was pretending to be a right winger to make fun of you. You are a walking Poe's Law, my friend.
Well, to bring it back a little bit, except not really. After the Boy Scouts decided to allow gay troop leaders earlier this year, the Values Voters Summit decided to uninvite the Boy Scouts and instead invite Trail Life, a much more explicitly religious organization. Trail Life is a scouting organization with an explicitly Christian statement of belief, with explicit text about sexuality and gender. The organization explicitly disallowed Jews, Mormons, and Muslims from being camper guy leaders?
They can't be leaders.
They can't be leaders.
From being campers. Guys.
In earlier editions of its website. The Value Voter Summit is an annual political conference run by SPLC-defined hate group Family Research Council.
I have a feeling this is from a somewhat propagandist left-wing source.
Possibly.
This article.
Ted Cruz won this year's presidential straw poll, if you're curious.
Stay tuned for more dirty socialism.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz also said he would assassinate the leader of Iran and send him off to see 72 virgins at this Values Voters Conference.
Like, see 72 virgins at the Values Voters Conference?
No.
That would be hard to do.
In the afterlife.
Oh, okay.
Why does anyone even try to win those straw polls? Because those are a guarantee you're not getting the nomination. Nobody who ever wins a straw poll of any kind in the Republican primary ever becomes nominee.
Yeah.
Period.
For the record, I wrote this brief.
Congratulations, the high point of your campaign, Senator Cruz.
So their website looks really slick. If you want to see like the good propaganda stuff, you have to hit archive.org and look at their site from 2014. These guys are like really recent.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I'm assuming that's a coincidence that this just the creation of this group happens to coincide with the Boy Scouts deciding that maybe gay people aren't irreputable monsters. I don't know. I'm trying to be open-minded, but it just seems to match up pretty well.
Yeah, it does
seem to. Total coincidence.
I still like that it's Trail Life, and with all the documentary that came out recently about the history of NWA, I keep wanting to call it Thug Life, Trail Life.
Thug Life Trail.
The trail chose me.
So I have some stuff here. For example, would Mormons or potential Mormon troops be welcomed into your organization? We certainly respect Mormons. However, Mormons would not participate in our program as a denomination because of our specific statement of faith, which holds a belief in the Trinity, which is not in step with Mormon theology.
Maybe after we get a second set of drinking fountains installed, the Mormons can come to our camp.
Now, it's not that we don't disallow them. They're not going to come because they don't believe in
bunking
Jesus.
Up with ours. Yeah.
That was the thing that I saw there, too, that you can be a Muslim or a Jew, but you have to make a statement and sign on to saying that you're Christian.
Yeah.
And it turns out most
only if you want to be a leader. You can be of any creed if you want to be a camper, and you know, because
but you still have to sign on to that belief system. Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Well, campers are there to be molded.
Yeah.
It's Jesus Camp from 5 years old to
Trail
20
Life USA
so
is a Trinitarian Christian organization. Well, this is the answer to what about Jewish youth? Trail Life USA is a Trinitarian Christian organization with a statement of faith that includes those denominations that specifically recognize Jesus Christ as the prophesized Messiah of the Jewish scriptures. There are some groups like Jews for Jesus that recognize Jesus Christ as the Messiah, but continue to hold to Jewish traditions and customs regarding feasts, etc. A Messianic Jew could indeed be a leader. However, a person of the Jewish faith would not be able to sign our statement of faith. Thus, according to our membership standards, Jewish churches and organizations would be precluded from chartering Trail Life USA troops.
I'm just going to say, as a general thing, if you are Jewish and you're thinking about going to this, do you really want to go to an organization that is a bunch of Christians in khaki uniforms who want to take you to a camp?
It's easier to join the Freemasons, which is basically, if you wanted to really have fun, say you're joining the Illuminati. It's easy. You can, I think you don't, you just any belief in God, I think, gets you into the Freemasons. But this has like a contract and all this garbage. Like, if you're going to, why not have the one with the secret rituals that doesn't lead to you being assaulted?
And it has beer.
Nope. Yeah. Free
yeah.
beer.
Yeah.
Actually,
funny aprons.
Speaking of the Freemason Illuminati thing, there was a, I think it was in the book Them, Adventures of the Extremists by John Ronson, which is a great book, by the way. You should all read it.
Okay.
He talks about meeting with any group that is considered extreme. And he talked to the people about the conspiracies about the Freemasons. And they're like, we can barely put on our luncheon every year. We can't rule the world.
Oh, that's what they would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you see the budget we're working with here?
So, well, you, Jeremy, you noticed some interesting activities that the
yeah,
trail life is going
on. Yeah, bigoted Christian camp looks sweet. I mean, they have the most amazing water slide idea I've ever seen, which is a piece of canvas with a tarp run down the middle, supported by bungee cords and a hose running down it. And it's like a slip and slide slash water slide to throw you into a lake.
It also...
This is like, it looks so much better than the Boy Scouts. It's like Bender and Futurama. Like, we're going to start our own summer camp with blackjack and hookers. And you can't come. It looks sweet.
It also vaguely looks like there is someone trying to go down the water slide, and it looks like they have a car seat that they're using.
Well, everything's safe and boring now.
Oh, okay.
In terms of water
slides. But not like baby car seat. Like, they ripped it out of a sedan.
All right, ready for the water slide? All right, sit down on the Civic bucket seat. Here we go.
Tuck and roll.
Push.
That sounds like something Jackass would do.
It looks vaguely Jackassian.
Yeah, have you look at this picture? It's crazy. It looks like it was bolted in the back of somebody's truck in 10 minutes.
It looks like the invention of your crazy uncle who's drunk all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it looks amazingly awesome, but your parents are like, we're not ever coming to his house again. Like, he needs to grow up.
I'm looking at another picture now, and why are they all surrendering?
Hmm?
What?
They're on kayaks with their arms over their heads.
That's not how you paddle.
I don't know. I'm not that outdoorsy to
Jesus,
know.
Jesus, take the oar.
Yeah. They're holding it to the spirit, and the spirit will push on the oars.
That's not a sail.
Into the rapids.
At least if they held up a towel, that would be closer to a sail.
Now I want, like, a version of the board game Clue with updated murder weapons, and one is, like, an oar. Another one is the Holy Ghost.
A shattered iPod.
Ow.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping for a can of hairspray and a lighter.
Does that actually work?
If you keep doing it, yes.
It depends on how much product they have in their hair at the time okay. you attack them.
And does that work with, like, modern hairspray or only, like, Aquanet or something?
Oh, no, modern hairspray. Like, an Aquanet, an aerosol hairspray.
Okay.
Pretty much
and
anything
throw,
an aerosol can.
Throw a handful of coffee creamer in front of that fireball you create and create a bigger fireball. I know a guy who does pyrotechnics for a living.
Okay.
I was legitimately...
Tried that with my canned air.
I was legitimately bewildered that people said Aquanet isn't a modern hairspray.
I just thought it was something my dad used by the vat in the 80s. I didn't realize...
I was a little confused by that, too. I guess I was thinking, like, I guess he thinks the modern ones are the ones where you have to squeeze them over and over and over again like a spray bottle.
Okay. I have not seen a can of Aquanet since 1989. Oh. I assume that Aquanet ended
I know
ended
a guy. I'll
point.
Hook you up.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say...
I know this guy named Fred Myers.
I went to Costco and have a gross of it sitting in my apartment, so...
A gross of it.
A gross of Aquanet.
That's what it's called. Like a murder of crows. It's a gross of Aquanet.
It's a gross of Aquanet.
I can't believe you unlettered fools didn't know that.
Still don't have as much as Trump does.
So, wow.
Seriously, it looks like he's wearing a batting helmet made out of cotton candy.
Just as a general piece of advice, do not send your children alone into the woods for religious indoctrination.
With Donald Trump.
Or anybody. Anybody yeah. this into it. I've been to something quite akin to Jesus camp, and it's not good for a child.
So have I. And yeah it sucks. I was kidnapped to one, briefly.
Oh, did
what?
You get that?
Yeah, they got the bus, the Baptist bus came along and said, hey, everybody want to go to camping? Like, all right, yeah.
Oh, you didn't get the home invasion kidnapping that the really bad kids get? Like, you know, where are those camps?
Yeah. No, my parents didn't send me.
The kidnap straight program.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounded like you were describing ISIS.
I've met
there.
A few people in Portland who went to something like that. I'll tell you, it doesn't work. They end up living in Portland. They go crazy.
at the far end, ISIS kind of is that.
It's like, hey, Boko Haram has a summer camp.
Yeah.
You don't know if you get to go back or not. It's mostly a girls' camp.
Yeah, the girls' camp, yeah, maybe not.
That's monstrous. What? Just somebody punch me in the face.
Yeah, jeez. Maybe a little far. I lived in like the poor part of town, and so the church would be like, oh, well, that's people who clearly have never seen the word on God. Bring the bus and load them all up, and then we'll take them to Iowa for a couple days.
Yeah, poor people are never religious.
They don't go for poor people because they haven't seen the word of God. Poor people get more exposure to the word of God than anyone.
Tell them that!
Because Bill Gates is not chasing the Mormons off his doorstep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They go because you're the easiest market. Children and the poor.
Yeah,
And of course, homeless people. The market invents itself.
Sure. No, and then, so my dad found out about it, and he was working at that apartment complex, and he would, like, chase the bus off whenever, after it would be, get out of here, you Baptists! And he would scream it like it was a curse. It was awesome.
Did we get to the Saudi Arabia crucifixions?
Yeah, we did.
Oh.
Mike, you had really good advice for that. If you're going to be crucified and beheaded...
Oh, that wasn't me. That was all Jeremy.
Oh, it was Jeremy? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
You hope they let you pick the order that goes down in, right? Because you definitely want the beheading first.
If they behead you first, do they have to nail the head to it, too?
Hmm?
It's separated, so it's not going to... They have to balance it really well, like a jack-o'-lantern.
Okay,
You're basically just a scarecrow at that point.
I think I figured out why there aren't any positive portrayals of atheists in the media, and it's basically us.
It's us, yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if the crucifixion happened publicly. Saudi Arabia has, like, really, like, forward-thinking shopping malls and stuff. Where would be the public venue where they would have the
Wasn't
crucifixion?
The Taliban doing it in the soccer stadium?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, the stadium or, like, because it obviously it's a crucifixion. It would be there on display, right? They wouldn't, like, do it in a private facility.
I hate saying it, but they do this often enough that they probably have a place just for doing that. They probably have an execution square.
Here's a post office.
Here's a Google search I never thought I would do.
Wow. I've seen the photo, and they don't use a guillotine either. They go old school with that. They bring out a sword.
Yeah.
Got a sword?
A sword. They bring out a sword and they...
Like the ridiculous curved
scimitar.
Yeah, the scimitar.
Jafar sword?
Scimitar.
I don't know much about it. I mean, that's the thing the thing with the human neck is it's really, really tough. And a guillotine, at least, is built so that it goes through the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's not quick if you're getting somebody probably repeatedly chopping at the back of you.
You're saying, so it happens enough that they have a place to do the beheadings. Do they have a separate place to do the crucifixions? And are they close enough together?
Probably the same place.
This is the worst department store ever.
And then, like, what kind of transportation company?
Because we're going to make sure he really learns his lesson. Either before or after we behead him, we're going to crucify him? Are we sure we're just not getting bad information on this?
It's entirely possible. I do know for a fact that they execute more people than anyone in the world save China.
Well, if you're counting this guy as two, I can see how that...
Really?
Yeah. China's number one for executions
in this country, we do give life sentences.
I was going to say, I thought China was first and we were second. And then...
No, it's Saudi Arabia. Well, they go... We put people on death row a lot, but appeals process is so long that it takes a long time to actually execute somebody. The process is a lot quicker when you don't have things like due process.
Well, yeah.
It turns out that justice moves very, very swift when you don't treat people like they have rights.
An attempt at due process.
Yeah.
To hold things up.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's entirely fair. We have killed innocent people in this country, but they have killed people that are guilty of non-crimes with a scary amount of regularity. And sometimes it's just saying something negative or just being perceived as being saying something negative about the government or the dominant faith or whatever. And it's scary how quickly that stuff snowballs. And it's depressing. It's really depressing.
Sorcery is punishable by the death penalty in Saudi Arabia.
Do they have a firm legal definition of sorcery, or is it just kind of like the Patriot Act? Just kind of throw it out there. Just sorcery.
I'm pretty sure it's the latter that one. Yeah.
I do too.
I can't figure out. Yeah.
We have done a story about sorcery before on this show.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
And somebody was, I think it was a psychic that was...
I can't find any information about a Saudi execution plex, so I assume they do it in...
It's a public square. So it's a really large area. They had more. They were doing more than one, so at least they're efficient about it.
Executions, historically, even in this country, they're still public to some extent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I still have
Which is always perplexes me. They're like, we have to let the family members in there to see, you know, the victims. See that guy die, they'll get closure. I'm like, that would give you closure?
Yeah. The thing that scared me, not
that
so much
scar
that.
Me
I'm not gonna,
for life.
I can't project myself on somebody who's lost a family member to violence that way. So I don't know what that
I'm
is.
I'm totally with
you. I don't think that you necessarily get that closure or it helps you in that specific way, but that's beside the point.
You don't.
Okay.
You straight up don't.
It's not going to... Oh, it's like Becky was never chopped to pieces.
But my main point, that was just the beginning of the sentence. The second half is the people that really scare me are the people who want blood on the outside who have no connection whatsoever to the crime or
spectacle.
The victims.
They want spectacle.
They're treating it like it's WrestleMania out there. That stuff scares me.
Fundamentalist Christians. My dad used to stay up till midnight to make sure the guy was dead.
And like, what, is he a vampire?
We do the execution at midnight.
We're gonna shoot a model rocket over the prison and try and catch his soul.
I think it was Ted Bundy. They executed Bundy, right?
He doesn't need to stay up. They're not going to call him in. He's like, I'm sorry, Jeremy's dad. We got to call you off the bench. This guy's hard to kill.
Oh, God, it's like that weird Disney movie where they bring the kid into the baseball game, except, oh, man, our executioner is sick. The only person we can have to kill people is this 8-year-old.
Oh, wow.
You just don't seem to understand my dad as a person. fundamentalists, a lot of them just are professional hate machines. And that's like my dad is like a religious Rush Limbaugh. His whole job is to hate things all the time. And so you have to hate the right things. Otherwise, he's a crazy person. But he needs to hate the right things so he looks righteous. So he did weird things like stay up and wait for Ted Bundy to be killed, they're usually delayed an hour or two. Also, it's like, we forgot the extension cord again.
Ted Bundy has called a timeout. Yeah. He's got two left.
My dad can't even stay up for like New Year.
Well, the rage is an incredible motivator.
At least they don't do the countdown. Jamie Kennedy isn't hosting that one.
I'd watch it if Jamie Kennedy was hosting it.
Yeah.
Based on what I've heard about...
Or Nick Cannon or one of these guys that's just owned by Disney and they're just there to be a happy face for... that'd be what...
I'm going to say, though, that
old Saved by the Bell cast member hosting an execution. I mean, there is a certain allure. Let's not get too down on the Saudis. There's a certain allure to watching someone cross over. Especially if you got the people from The Voice or something. I'm seeing it.
Wait, does the person...
Am I banned from the show for life yet?
Does possibly. The person being executed have to sing? And then you hit the button and then finally the sweet release of death takes them?
Everything becomes a musical.
Am I banned from the show now?
I think we're all banned from the show.
Oh, jeez. I got dark fast.
Yeah.
But, oh man, that's the thing, speaking about Jamie Kennedy hosting something like that,
Do you want to be an executioner?
No, oh my God. You know what scares me is that would have a lot of response. People would sign up for that.
Yeah.
And I would hate humanity that much more. But it's like, who gets to push the button? But the thing that gets me is you look at how executions are actually done.
Who wants to be an executioner?
Yeah.
And how botched they've been in recent years, it probably would go over better than the Jamie Kennedy late night special for the New Year's. Less technical difficulties.
I'm sorry, the last like New Year's thing that I witnessed, what's his face, was still alive.
Dick Clark.
Yeah, Dick Clark and the dropping of the ball kind of thing.
I don't know who does that now. I think it's Tom Bergeron, who's kind of the standby host for things.
Isn't he a weatherman?
No, he was like the host of Hollywood Squares, and he's done a bunch of other things. He's actually a good host. I like Tom Bergeron. It's kind of a weird thing. But he's likable, and
Him talk. I want to see where he goes with this.
No, there's different kinds of hosts of any sort of show. There's somebody who's, it's like, I guess you could call it the Michael Moore method, where you want to be the star, even if you're the least interesting thing on screen.
Yeah.
That you're supposed to be telling somebody else's story. And then there's people who can be interesting and still let the person they're interviewing be the star of the segment. And Tom Bergeron can do a show like, say, Hollywood Squares, and he can be funny without trying to overshadow
everyone. I still think he's either a weather meteorologist guy on the Weather Channel or a Kurt Vonnegut character.
I was going to make the Kurt Vonnegut reference.
Okay. Awesome.
In my head, it was like Muzak composer.
Muzak.
Like, brought to you by Tom Bergeron.
Also sounds like an Audi model. The Audi Bergeron.
Bergeron. Bergeron sounds like a really expensive sports car.
Yeah.
The one that...
Like the R8.
Yeah. It sounds...
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have no idea. Not at all. I'm going to assume it's fast.
Yeah, kind of.
Have I ever driven in a Grand Theft Auto game?
No.
Okay.
Probably something looks like it now, but...
Cool. I learned about executions and Audis today.
Uh-huh. So what do I do with this? Oh, Aaron Ra. I look like a tiny Aaron Ra. That's what I look like.
You're like, you can form together to be Master Blaster?
Apparently. That's what I was told. Because
right on his shoulder?
Remember when someone who shall not be named was did the behind-the-scenes Ask an Atheist video, and I showed up when my hair was still wet?
Oh.
Yeah, there were like 5 or 6 YouTube comments. So I was like, wow, Sam looks like a tiny Aaron Ross.
There was a behind-the-scenes Ask an Atheist video?
Yeah.
A tiny Aaron Ross. So a normal-sized human being.
Pretty much.
Aaron Ross is like 9.5 feet tall.
Yeah,
he was once mistaken for Bigfoot. That's a true story.
Yeah. Yeah, that Washington song is actually about Aaron Ross.
Huh.
Yeah. 6'20".
How tall is he really? Is he really like 7 feet tall?
He's damn near if he's not. I mean, yeah. Okay. I'd have to go look. I'd have to ask him, I guess. I don't know. Are we done? Do you think we're done?
Yeah, let it die.
I'm calling it.
In your Audi R8.
This podcast died at approximately 2:53 p.m. Pacific time. Pull the sheet, Sam.
I'm pulling it.
Taco, taco. Taco, taco. Need more taco. Yummy, yummy taco. I need more taco. Delicious taco. Wish I had some taco. I want some taco. I wish I had some taco. Taco to call my own. Yes, I like tacos all day.